Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is a podcast that tries to keep you up to date on what's been going on throughout the week, from news to entertainment to people who are doing interesting things in Ireland and around the world. I'm Louise McSharry, obviously. I hope you're feeling well. I hope you had a good week. I have to say I had a pretty good one. I was in Dubrovnik from Friday to Monday. Just had an absolutely amazing time. It was a trip that was planned by my friend for his 40th birthday, and it was just gorgeous. We went to so many nice places. It felt like way longer than a weekend, you know, because we were really busy and we saw so many cool things. And it was actually my third time to visit Dubrovnik, and I can't recommend it enough. It's not cheap, but it's not like more expensive than here, I don't think, if it is marginally, but it's so beautiful. I think a lot of people know it's the city that a lot of Game of Thrones was filmed in, so there's a good bit of kind of Game of Thrones stuff around. But it is an old, beautiful, like marble city. The weather is gorgeous in the summer. The people are nice. You can go swimming in the sea, which I did loads of times over the course of the weekend. I would highly recommend it. It's a long enough flight for a weekend, 3.5 hours, but like, you know yourself. You just get through those hours, don't you? I didn't have the kids with me now, so I can't really give any feedback on what it's like for kids, but it was a beautiful weekend with friends catching up after a long time. We were all there 10 years ago for my friend's wedding, and then he was turning 40. So we all went back, and it was, yeah, very, very special. So I'm feeling very lucky and in much better form than I was at the start of last week's episode. So that's, thank God, says you. Would you believe this is the 21st episode of Catch Up, 21, never been kissed, the 21st episode of Catch Up with Louise McSharry. And I did get some messages from people asking me why I had been snubbed by the Irish Podcast Awards. I just need to clarify that, first of all, I was not snubbed. And second of all, that's kind of not really how most awards in Ireland work anyway. So in order to be nominated for an Irish Podcast Award, first of all, you submit yourself. So you know, it's entirely up to a podcast whether or not they want to apply to be nominated. And secondly, I didn't qualify. So according to their rules, you had to have three full episodes released in March. And I only started this podcast in the last week in March. So I didn't qualify this year, but that's absolutely fine. And next year, maybe I'll give it a lash. There is a people's choice or a listener's choice category where you can nominate literally any podcast. So if you want to, you can nominate me there, but I would have no expectations whatsoever in that regard. But I absolutely wish everybody the best of luck. It's always nice to get an award. Although I will say I'm a perennial loser of awards. It's just not in my nature. And frankly, I think it's made me a stronger person. Anyway, let's get going. We've got lots to talk about this week. Later on, we're going to be talking to fashion designer Olivia Rubin, who I'm just such a huge fan of. We had a really interesting conversation about inclusivity in fashion and how she started her own brand and stuff like that. But for now, let's get the news from the glorious, the talented Aoife Moore. Aoife Moore, you're back in the country. How was Amsterdam?
It was very Dutch.
Wonderful. Lots of stroopwafels.
Lots of stroopwafels.
Wonderful.
I took in all the sights and signs of smells of Dutch culture.
Well, I'm thrilled for you.
It's great.
Your soul is enriched. I can see it on your face.
It's called a hangover.
Okay, let's get into the news because we've got lots to talk about. And you were just saying that the first story we're going to talk about is a little bit complicated, but it seems like it's a bit of a storm in a teacup.
Yeah, this is what we call a bubble story in Leinster House. I really have not met one normal person who has found this as dramatic as the people in Leinster House have. Long story short, the president's wife, Sabina Coyne Higgins, wrote a letter to the Irish Times 2 weeks ago in which she kind of lamented the war in Ukraine. And she said that until the world persuades Russia and Ukraine to agree a ceasefire and negotiate, the long haul of terrible war will go on.
It seems reasonable.
Yeah, it was published with very little fanfare on the letters page of the Irish Times. It didn't really go anywhere. Sabina said that, first name terms, Sabina, said that a number of people had asked her about the letter, like friends or whatever, had asked her about the letter. So she posted it on the president's website. So I don't know if we're supposed to call him the first lady. We don't really say that, but for want of a better word, the first lady has her own section on the president's website. That's very normal. It's been going for quite a while. She posted it there. Then it began to pick up some steam because the Irish Times then went around looking for comment from different people on what they thought of the letter. Some people, mostly Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael senators, were upset at the tone of the letter. They said that she had kind of conflated Russia and Ukraine, you know, put them on the same level when clearly Russia is the aggressor. You know, it's to put them on the same level or plane wasn't fair. You know, the Ukrainian ambassador and a number of Ukrainian MPs said they were dismayed by the comments, that they thought they were a bit clunky and hurtful, and you know, this notion that if Ukraine could just get around the table with Russia, then everything would be fine.
Yeah, when of course what's happened is Ukraine have been attacked.
Exactly. Yeah. Sabina Higgins, this kind of rolled on for a few days. There was these kind of inane, you know, calls for the president to resign if he didn't apologize for his wife's comments, which, oh my God. Anyway, so Sabina Higgins then released another statement saying that she strongly condemns the illegal Russian invasion of Ukraine, and she defended her comments, but she said she was dismayed by the criticism. She said, "I have from its outset strongly condemned the illegal Russian invasion of Ukraine, and I cannot be dismayed that people would find anything unacceptable in a plea for peace." And then went on to say, you know, global war and warming, war and famine, everything else that's coming along with the war in Ukraine. It appears now that the controversy, if we can even call that, is over. It was probably maybe a wee bit ill thought out, considering the public platform that the president and his wife had, that maybe she could have been stronger in her language. But as she said, she did not think that a plea for peace would create such a scandal. However, in this day and age, with the war still rumbling on, maybe it could have been a bit better.
It's the time we live in, isn't it? That every piece, every word, every sentence is analysed so intently and looked for meaning within it that you have to be so careful.
Yeah, I think she took it as a given that people would know that she was condemning Russia, but she didn't explicitly state it. Yeah. And that's why it started this whole ruckus.
Yeah. And that's it, isn't it? You just can't take anything as a given anymore. Like, I've experienced that myself over the years.
Yes, so
you have to be careful. You say things on the basis that you think that people know that, of course, you think A, B, or C, but they don't always.
Context and sarcasm is also lost a lot.
Exactly. So. Now, this one,
oh my God, I'm so excited.
I put this in as a treat for you, Aoife. I did, because I was like, this could go in either of the news slots. It could go in the news slot or it could go in the entertainment news slot. But I was like, let's give Aoife a treat.
I never get these ones.
Talk about Rebecca Vardy.
Oh my God. Is there ever a woman with so little self-awareness? Like, Rebecca Vardy said that she feels let down by the legal system and has further denied leaking stories about Colleen Rooney to the tabloids following her loss of the libel battle in the High Court. You know, it was found, I find this insane. So Rebecca Vardy now is going to have to pay around £3 million in legal fees. Colleen Rooney is not taking any compensation from this. She just wants the legal fees paid. So it was found by the court that Rebecca Vardy and her agent leaked to the Sun newspaper about Colleen Rooney's personal life. We all know how this came to light with the Wagatha Christie. It's .. Rebecca Vardy's account. Now, I would say Rebecca Vardy has said that she has received a lot of online abuse and hate in the wake of this, which is absolutely unacceptable.
Always unacceptable.
Shouldn't happen to anyone. But this woman, then she went on Talk TV, which is like a, I don't know, like a British kind of chat, I don't know what it is, 24-hour talk show thing. Yeah. And she said, "I will say till I'm blue in the face, I did not do it." She was found to have done it. You know, she found that she also probably destroyed evidence because a phone went missing.
This is the best bit of the entire story, that when they're gathering evidence for the trial, the libel case, agent is like, "Oh, that phone fell into the sea."
The North Sea.
Sorry. Like, imagine, I mean, it's a good excuse.
My favourite part of the trial was when the barrister said, "Now that phone is at the bottom of Davy Jones's locker," and Rebecca Vardy said, "Who's that?"
Look, you can't know all the cultural touch points. But yeah, like, I mean, look, it all looked extremely murky, and it did seem very likely that, you know, there was involvement by Rebecca Vardy.
Oh, there absolutely was.
And
there
even
was...
if, like, I think what we saw is that maybe Rebecca Vardy herself did not pick up the phone and make the calls. Mm-hmm. But Rebecca Vardy is the person who had access to the personal stories via Colleen Rooney's Instagram account. Mm-hmm. And that's how they ended up in the paper.
Yeah, it was, you know, she has been caught red-handed. You know, she now faces this huge legal bill. I think what it is Rebecca Vardy has absolutely no self-awareness. She now feels like she needs to go on this kind of redemption tour and say that, you know, "I've been let down by the legal system." In that Talk TV interview that she did, she said she was the victim of sexism. That's not sexism. I mean, I'm sure some of the commentary about Colleen Rooney and Rebecca Vardy was very sexist.
And misogynistic, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think the kind of key takeaway from this is, I was going to say quit while you're ahead, but quit while you're behind and just put your head down and move on.
Yeah. I wonder if she'd gone the complete opposite way, if she'd just been like, "Look, I'm a gossipy bitch.
Yeah.
I can't help it. Then, I'm really sorry. I shouldn't have said it to anyone. I didn't call the papers, but it is probably through me that the stories got there, and I'm really sorry."
Could you imagine...
Life goes on.
Could you imagine the fan base that she would have created with women and gay men if she had just came out and said, "I'm a gossipy bitch"?
I know.
We'd be making t-shirts.
Yeah, like, I think, yeah, she played it the wrong way. I do honestly, genuinely hope she's okay, though, because I'm sure it has been incredibly stressful, even though she seems to have made bad decisions at every turn. And no one, as we said, no one deserves kind of a high level of abuse. I think it would be good for her to just kind of take a step back, spend some time with her family, enjoy all the money that she has, and just continue her life.
I also do think fame is a type of brain worms.
Oh, big time.
Like, I would hate to be famous. Mm. I know I am the presence of a celebrity here, but I would
excuse me. A rising star, Aoife Moore. You've got your own following, babe.
I would hate to be famous, and I think probably she doesn't know left from right anymore without someone telling her. So I think that's probably part of it. And everyone around her is saying, "Yeah, you were let down, Rebecca."
Yeah.
Whereas what she really needs is like an Irish mammy to be like, "You were caught.
Cop yourself on now." Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to Kansas, where there was a ruling on abortion rights.
Yeah. So as we know, since the kind of dissolving of Roe versus Wade, which protected abortion rights in America, the states are now going to what I'm going to call like mini referendums, to make it more in an Irish context. But in the state of Kansas, voters have voted to protect abortion rights and rejected a measure that would have allowed the Republican-controlled legislature in that state to tighten abortion restrictions and ban it outright. This is a really good sign. It's a huge victory for abortion rights, and there are now many states that have actually put it to the states. So this is the first vote that we're going to see, but there's a number of votes coming up in places like Kentucky, Louisiana, places like that, that they're putting it to the people and letting them vote on it. And we know from all public polling, both Democrat and Republican, that the public in America are in favor of abortion rights. Mm. I think this is the most democratic way to do it. I mean, I don't think we should be voting on rights. I just don't think that's something we should. I find the referendum on equal marriage very disturbing, same as the repeal of the 8th, same as these. But if this is what it takes to save abortion rights in some states in America, then this is the most democratic way to do it, rather than letting Republican legislatures run roughshod over people's rights and people's actual wants. And you know,
and there is something to be said for kind of taking the temperature. I'm not saying that doing it through a vote, you know, on actually, like, literally whether or not people get rights is the right way. But what you do get from that is a real indication of where people stand. And, you know, sometimes that is good to have. And there's other ways of doing it, of course.
Yeah, but there is. But this is seen as a great victory for the Democrats. It's, they're very heartened by it because a lot of Republicans came out to vote. They have found as well, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, that the Democrats are actually hoping to see a swing now in the midterms because of the bans on abortion, that people who might have been in the centre ground are going to be forced now, maybe that wouldn't usually vote Democrat, to vote Democrat because of the abortion, right? We are seeing the Republican Party in America swinging further and further to the right. You know, it's getting quite scary when you watch some of it, some of the stuff that they're saying. And there's already talk of, you know, when we've talked about it on this podcast before, about rolling back equal marriage, allowing employers to decide whether women get contraception on their health insurance. Very, very scary stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. I was reading a story yesterday, absolutely banana story, about a proposal that veterans, so anyone who'd served in the armed forces in the US, should be given a teaching certificate for 5 years, which means that they could teach without any qualification, purely based on the fact that they had been in the military.
Is that real?
Yeah. And obviously it's because there is a teacher shortage. And so this is a proposal that's been come up as a solution.
Why is there a teacher shortage? Because they don't pay them enough.
Well, yes, I mean, I agree. But the fact that this proposal has actually been put forward in a serious manner, I just was reading it and I was like, this is completely insane. Like, this is completely insane. And I was like, I think we all thought, or people who know more than me probably didn't, but I naively thought that if we could just get a Democrat in the White House, things would calm down and we could just look back at the Trump era as a nightmare. But of course, Trump laid the ground for things like, you know, what's happening in the Supreme Court. And, you know, we're still suffering the consequences of that. And there is that swing toward the far right that is absolutely terrifying. And, you know, we can only hope, people who obviously, you know, feel like freedom is important, we can only hope, although they of course would argue that they're fighting for freedom, but we can only hope that we will see kind of a big swing in the midterms. We will watch with interest. Finally, you and I are going to talk about sport again. We're so good at this.
So sporty. Two sporty spices.
Just so good at it. I have to say, I was really delighted to see England win the Euros.
Buzzing. I think like the only time I'd ever be happy about England winning anything.
I know.
I think
loads of people were like that, and I was trying to figure it out. And I was like, is it because I love women more than the kind of inbuilt Irish kind of, you know, feelings about the English?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
But then I was like, but the Germans were women too. But I felt connected to the English women.
Yeah, they speak English. It's one of that thing, you know, that football's coming home, and then that old saying, if you want something done, you have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Well, woman brought it home. England won its first ever major women's championship in dramatic fashion last week. They beat Germany 2-1 the extra time in the Euro 2022 final at Wembley. This is my favourite part. A record crowd of 87,000 for a European Championship final, men's or women's. Watch them win. Truly couldn't be better. There's amazing pictures of one girl just tearing her shirt off at the end and running around in her sports bra. And it was just so good to see, you know, RTE had a lot of footage the next day of wee girls around Ireland watching it on the TV and knowing that soccer is an option.
Yeah.
They interviewed wee girls from, I think it was Clontarf or Merino Soccer Club, who were like 7 or 8. And it was so sweet to hear them saying like, oh, I love watching women's football.
It's amazing.
It's not something I ever grew up with. I cannot ever remember seeing women play football ever as a kid.
Yeah, it was so in America it was a little bit different. It's huge. It is absolutely huge. Everyone plays soccer, as we call it. So like I started playing when I was 7. I refereed as a teenager for younger kids, and the girls and boys are so treated weird. Exactly the same. I know that's weird. I also find it weird. I do actually understand football. It's just not usually something that I take a great interest in. But honestly, with the women playing, I'm taking much more of an interest. Mm. You know, I had Katie McCabe, who's the captain of the Ireland team, on the podcast a while ago, and I basically just fell in love with her. So I've taken more of an interest since then.
You've mentioned her at least 4 times.
Because she's brilliant. She's just brilliant. And she's really bloody good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have actually a real hope of doing well as Ireland if we invest in girls football and if we show them the way. I thought it was really interesting. Something I learned this week, which I didn't know, was that the FA in England actually banned women's football for 50 years. That apparently in the 20s or around kind of the war, the first war, women were playing football to raise money for the war effort. And then when the men came home, it was decided that it wasn't appropriate for women to be playing anymore. So they were actually banned for 50 years. But during that time that they were playing, they had like 50,000 people at Goodison Park, 14,000 people waiting outside. Like, it was absolutely enormous. So, you know, when you think about how far of a setback women's football experienced as a result of that ban, it's going to take time to get back. But like, we're definitely getting there.
But it is also that thing that women have to be twice as good to do anything so that a man can do. So yeah, of course we were stopped playing football for 50 years and then came back and won the World Cup. You know, it's not ultimately that surprising.
The Euros, babe.
So nearly swore.
That would be okay. Swearing is allowed.
So yeah, football came home. Well done to the England ladies. Yeah. Everyone was buzzing for them. Onwards and upwards.
Absolutely.
Maybe they will win the World Cup, but I will stand
Maybe they will.
Corrected.
Maybe they will. Aoife, thank you so much. Aoife Moore. New title. Political correspondent for the Sunday Times. Yeah.
Pick up the Sunday Times on Sunday, please.
There you go. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Olivia Rubin is a fashion designer who specializes in fun, rainbow-themed clothing with a layer of sophistication, it has to be said. I've admired her stuff for years and was absolutely delighted to find last year that her entire range goes up to a size 24. Not one or two pieces, not like specially designed stuff or a specific section, the whole range. She is going to be at the Dublin Horse Show judging the Very Ladies Day on August 18th. That's Very, used to be Littlewoods, now it's Very. And I was delighted to get a chance to speak with her ahead of that. I wanted to hear about her path to fashion, from working for Dior and McQueen in Paris to starting her own brand, her decision to work toward inclusivity, of course. And also I wanted to know, how's that going for her? I hope you enjoy. Well, I'm so happy to be speaking to you, Olivia. I still remember the first time I came to know who you are was when I saw that stunning sequined rainbow skirt that was so iconic, I think, for your brand. I can't remember who I first saw it on. I think it might have been Vogue Williams. And I was just like, amazing. I was like, first of all, sequins, amazing. In rainbow, it just had never occurred to me that that was a possibility. That was a real breakout moment for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, the rainbow sequin skirt was, I think, well, I don't know if it still is the most iconic, but it definitely used to be. And was like the piece that I put a lot of the brand success down to, and how I kind of made the brand catapult into the world of social media and celebrities and really expand that brand name globally.
But of course, that's not where your fashion career began. So maybe you could fill people in a little bit on where you had been up to that point.
Yeah. So my fashion career started probably at senior school when I was studying A-levels. I always knew that I wanted to go into fashion from quite an early age and immediately decided to follow the art route by doing art GCSE and then A-level. Mm. And I was lucky enough that my art teacher had a background in textiles. So during art lessons, she would show me all these new textile techniques that I was super interested in. And we put on a little fashion show for the school, the first of its kind. Mm-hmm. And then really from that point onwards, I was like a diehard clothes show fan, bought Vogue every week, as kind of cliched as that sounds. And knew that I wanted to go to St. Martin's because that was where all the designers that I looked up to had been, who had started their careers there. So I went to St. Martin's. I did the course, applied for the course Fashion Print, which is quite a unique course because it allows you to study print and textiles, but apply that to fashion, to women's wear. So you also learn pattern cutting technique, sewing. And that was a full-on like four-year course in London at Charing Cross Road before they moved into a big fancy shiny new venue now in King's Cross. And then from there I worked with a variety of designers. I did a year in Paris with Dior and Galliano. I worked at Alexander McQueen. I did a lot of freelance print work, and I did all of that until the point where I was pregnant with my first daughter.
So that's, you know, casual names to drop there that you worked with. How was that? I mean, like, I feel like the world of fashion, and particularly at that level, has this reputation for being really high octane, quite intense, maybe not the most fun. How did you find it?
The working with the designer aspect. I think because I'd worked so hard during my time at St. Martin's, it was like a natural progression that you then go and work for a designer. So I think looking ahead while I was studying, that was the culmination point of all the work that I'd done and all the collections that I'd created. And it really gave me an insight into the workings of a fashion brand, not only design wise, but also business wise.
Yeah.
And like all of the inverted commas boring stuff that goes on behind the scenes of creating a brand.
Mm. So then you mentioned that you had a kind of turning point, I suppose, or maybe a pause. I don't know how you'd like to term it, when you got pregnant. Did you take a break? How did you feel kind of at that stage?
Yeah, I did take a break, I think, because I didn't do a gap year. I didn't go traveling. Mm. I was pretty much doing internships during all summer holidays and school holidays. So I literally felt a little bit burnt out.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit, not let down, but I felt like the whole fashion industry at that time, when it was very much about, there was no kind of inclusivity in fashion. It was still very much orientated around like size two, all these catwalk shows. You had to be like a certain type of high fashion brand in order to show at fashion weeks.
Mm.
I felt a little bit discouraged by the industry. Mm. I don't know if that was because I hadn't taken a break, so mentally I was quite exhausted. Mm. And probably just at a time when I didn't feel like I could relate to that whole fashion vibe that was going on.
Yeah.
So I just decided, you know, I need to take some time out. This would be a good time to maybe just reflect on what I want to do in the future.
Yeah.
Put some time into myself, into like starting a family, really not knowing if I ever really wanted to go back into it.
Mm.
It was quite a it's quite a reflective time, I'd say.
And so what made you decide that you did want to kind of return to the world of fashion?
I don't think it was like a eureka moment or like a sudden waking up one day thinking, oh, you know, I want to design rainbows, I want to start a brand, I want to go back to working full time.
Yeah.
I did small things for myself, like I started doing life class drawing again. I started doing like evening art courses. I started doing a London College of Fashion evening business course, just small things that I wanted to do for myself. Because I do feel like when you have newborns and you know, especially your first, I feel like the world can seem kind of like quite a different place. And I felt like I did had kind of lost my path or my identity a little bit. Having my first child, I also found it like a very stressful time. I don't think it like came naturally to me, and I was very like a very nervous first time mum.
I really, really relate to that. I felt the exact same. It was so hard to kind of claw back. You know, it is such a transformative experience in terms of your life. Like, your life changes so totally overnight when you become a mother, that then you have to kind of recalibrate and to try and claw back your little bits of time and who you are. And I think we're kind of sold this idea that you'll immediately settle into it and it just happens naturally. But I actually don't think that's the case at all.
I also do wonder whether it's because I was doing like a lot of work, freelance work before, and I was kind of scattered amongst different jobs. Like it wasn't like I was in a steady full-time role in one place. Whereas I think if like I can only relate to some people within my brand at the moment who are going on maternity leave soon. They've kind of been with me for like 3 or 4 years, they're settled, they know they want to have a child, they know they want to come back to work. So I think it was a different mentality that I had at that time, and I did feel a bit lost. So I started doing those little artistic, creative times for myself, and then I just decided, I just started making myself clothes again. I was experimenting with color. I made like not a rainbow sequin, but I created these clothes that I was then wearing on Instagram. And at that point, Instagram hadn't really taken off. It was still in its early stages of becoming this like addictive social media app. So I started just posting a few photos of clothes, people saying, oh, I love that, can you make me one? Friends saying, oh, I like that, can you make me one for this occasion? And then it built up that way.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you were feeling a little bit kind of disenchanted with the lack of inclusivity that was in the world of fashion at the time that you were working in Paris and the time that you got pregnant. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that I was excited to talk about you or talk to you, excuse me, because I remember, so I'm a size 24 and I have written kind of quite extensively and spoken quite extensively about the challenges that you face if you're someone who has an interest in fashion. Well, to be honest, even if you don't have an interest in fashion, just it's quite difficult to access clothing as a plus size person. But if you're someone who really likes to express yourself through your clothes, I think it's even harder. And I will never forget the day that I realized that you made my size. It was a real moment of joy. Like, I can't really... Like, if you're interested in fashion and you're plus size, you spend your life looking at things and then going to the website and checking if they make your size. And 95% of the time, they don't. 95% of the time, it's just not available. So to have one of those experiences where you're expecting to be let down and then find, oh, no, my size is there. You know, it was just such a great thing. So I have felt like a real grog, as we say in Ireland, for your brand ever since then. So I'm interested to know, you know, where did that kind of desire to make your brand more inclusive come from?
Well, I think solely the main fact that the whole brand is centered around the meaning behind rainbows and color and having that feeling of positivity, you know, energy and vibrancy. It just made sense to me that when the brand grew to a certain level, that we explore that avenue. It has been and still is like a journey for us. You know, we do go to size 24. We do want to explore larger sizes than that. We do want to explore like the petite size of the range. And it's just, it was a lot of work that was involved because it still is. Like, we do at least one or two fittings every month on different size bodies. We just wanted to make our clothes more accessible and not have any restrictions, because that's what I feel the brand should be, and more brands should be. I think like lots more have followed suit in the fact that they don't just go up to a size 14 and 16. And interestingly, a lot of our stockists as well have had like a really positive reaction to this full size range. So it's only been positive feedback. And
yeah, I was interested to ask you about that because obviously, you know, because I have, well, I have a vested interest, but I also am just interested in this as a, I suppose, someone who's curious. You know, I have met, because I'm a person who has a certain profile in Ireland, I would be invited to fashion events and I would quite often find myself invited to events where there's nothing for me. And, you know, I remember I went to one particular press day and the reason that I went was because all of the designers of the different brands were going to be there. And I went around and I don't enjoy doing this. It's not fun for me to say, hey, you don't make my size. What's the story? But I did. And the responses I got were really mixed. I mean, some of them really, you know, said that they really wanted to. Some people said that they had experimented with an extra size, but it hadn't been successful. You know, some people had other reasons. So I was interested to know, as someone who's done it, you know, has it been positive, you know, or has it been this huge challenge that feels pointless? I mean, even just from a commercial perspective.
I think actually that's really interesting about from what you said about yourself and the feedback that you get from different designers. And I think because I have grown the brand ultimately through Instagram and social media, and I have direct contact with followers, with customers, having these conversations and meeting these people through Instagram from their DMs saying, I wish you made my size, or, you know, I love your brand. I'm not trying to be mean or critical of you, but is there any chance that you could start doing these sizes? I was having a lot of conversations with content creators and PR people through Instagram. And I'm also someone that doesn't really like to say no to someone. And I was thinking about it and like, actually, why aren't we doing this? You know, in the back of my mind, it was always a project that I wanted to fulfill, and it was about getting the timing. And I think it was just either before or after COVID or possibly during COVID that I was having more of these conversations. And then as soon as we were like back in person, we were working on it, like working on fits, working on doing a full size range in all of the pieces, not just us handpicking what styles should go up to a 24.
Which is extra meaningful, can I just say, because, you know, often what happens is, and look, you know, the reality is we're grateful for what we get because we're excluded from so much. But like to really be included across, I mean, it means so much to genuinely have choice, to be able to look at a website just like anybody else does and say, oh, I like that for whatever reason, and not have some, you know, someone up in the ethers decide, oh, this is what I've decided is appropriate for your body.
Because I think of myself, and I mean, although I'm not a size 24, I would never want someone else to decide for me what I can pick from. I should be able to pick this myself. And one of the we recently did a size inclusive talk with Charlotte Jacqueline and Sarah Brown, and actually Sarah is someone who I probably did have like a little bit of an awkward conversation with many, many years ago about bringing in the bigger sizes. And, you know, we've become really good friends through it. And I always use her as someone to springboard ideas off. And she was saying to me, you know, I love the fact that you, for a mini dress, you don't decide to make it, you know, 10 inches longer for 24, because I'm size 24 and I still want to wear a short dress. Yeah. Why shouldn't I be able to wear a short dress? And I feel like a lot of designers take it upon themselves to think what other, you know, sizes want to wear when we don't do that anymore. And we've introduced also a pre-order system, which allows people to order exactly what they want and be able to get it in the size they want and not create like a lot of wastage as well. So I think maybe one of the feedbacks you may have had is we want to try it, but it's expensive and we don't know what styles people will want to buy in these bigger sizes. So therefore offering this pre-order system lets everyone order what they want.
Well, I think you're doing it exactly right. And I'm delighted to hear as well that you'd like to kind of look to expanding, because that's always something that I love to hear. But I have to ask you, because of course you are an ambassador for Very, which we have known in Ireland until recently as Littlewoods, but is now Very.ie. And they are sponsoring Ladies' Day at the Dublin Horse Show, and you're going to be a judge. So what are you going to be looking for?
I think something that is creative, something that someone feels good in and feels comfortable in, feels themselves in, something that's well styled. I think that's always like a really tricky skill, because you want to wear the clothes, you don't want the clothes to wear you. So I think those kind of factors. And colourful. I mean, I can't discriminate against like colourful, but I'm naturally going to be drawn to something that's like bright and vibrant.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and you're allowed to have your own personal taste. I've actually never been to a ladies' day. I think I might need to make it my business to go, because I do love to dress up. Well, thank you so much, Olivia. I will hopefully look out for you on Ladies' Day. I'm not saying that you should pick me for best dressed, but like obviously I would be open to that. Thank you so much, and thanks for, you know, working hard to make your brand inclusive, because it really means so much. I mean, it means so much to me as an individual, but I have friends who I know have bought Olivia Rubin clothes and have been absolutely thrilled to be able to.
Oh, well, that's one reason why I do it, so thank you for that. Kind of feedback.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Given the week that's in it, I thought we'd get a Love Island expert on to discuss the week's entertainment stories. Orla Condon is the host of the Love Island recap podcast, My Pod on Paper, and she's got the lowdown on the show wrapping up and lots more besides. Orla Condon, I just was about to say to you, compliment you on the success of My Pod on Paper, and then I said we better hit record, because of course you are the host of My Pod on Paper, which is a Love Island recap podcast, which has been going for 4 years, is it? Yeah. And like...
Yeah.
It is a real undertaking. Like, you are on there every night, right?
Yeah, we record Sunday to Thursday. So we don't do Fridays, which was a shame this year, because a lot of the action on Love Island happened on a Friday this year. Usually it doesn't always go that way. But yeah, it's a big project. That's why I'm so glad for the medium of podcasting that nobody else but you, Louise, gets to see my face right now. Because I feel like I've aged at a rate that is not healthy.
Well, I think you do such a brilliant job. And I feel truly gutted that I did not engage with Love Island this year. I was just away for the first couple of weeks. I was away twice, like, so I just couldn't. I never got a chance to get my foot in. Yeah. And then I was like, it's too late. And I'm devastated, because it seems like it was a really good season this year.
I remember messaging you being like, come on in for a chat. And you were like, I'm not watching it. And I was like, no, Louise, I really want to chat to you about the show. And at that point, it was like, it was all star status. It was like, this is the perfect season. We definitely hit a bump in the road after Casa Amor, that kind of 2 weeks after Casa Amor. got a bit murky, and to that place where Love Island fans are like, why do we always have to bring the conversation here?
Yeah.
So it definitely got to a place like that where we were all a bit like, not again. But then it wrapped up well. And I think with the winners, like Ekansu and Davide were just the ultimate fan winners. They weren't the kind of people that ITV, I imagine, wanted to win, but we wanted them so badly that it was like, it just has to be them.
Okay, so I need an explanation for people like me who didn't watch this year, and I do feel like we're few and far between because it seemed like everyone was talking about it, but what was it about Ekansu and Davide that made them so special?
Do you know what it was? I think Love Island has become this kind of like fast track to celebrity over the years. Like, you forget about the kind of characters like Olivia Attwood way back when, who was just like such a natural reality TV star and just made for amazing television. And she became a celebrity as a result of that, of her contribution to reality TV. Whereas in recent years, I mean, like, there's a lot of people who have become huge. I mean, Molly Mae, was she that gripping as a reality TV star?
No,
it was very much the look and what she was selling and, you know, people aspiring to be like her rather than her actually giving us amazing reality TV. So I think Ekansu and Davide felt very much a throwback to this kind of, yes, they're obviously here and Ekansu was clearly here to make a career after this and make money after this. But I think she understood that this was also a platform for her to make a splash. And there wasn't a single episode where there wasn't some note on my computer about what Ekansu or Davide was up to. Like, no matter whether it was the most boring episode or it was totally focused on other couples, there was always a moment. And I just think they really grafted for 8 weeks to give us those moments, and they had to be rewarded for it.
I saw people saying things like, we stan a messy queen. Like, was she messy? Dramatic?
She definitely was. Oh yeah, she definitely was. And she
knew. I'm raging now that I didn't see her.
No, she was like, she was all-star status. She was amazing. And she wasn't against kind of putting herself in the bad guy position to make stories. And she definitely worked her story arc really well, in that she knew coming in, she wanted to be that bombshell and the one who made the real impact, and she did. And then she kind of settled with Davide, and then she was like, okay, what's my next story? It needs to be me being a bit of a villain. So she did that. And then it was her redemption story. And she did that. And all the while, you were just like, well, I mightn't agree with what you're doing or how you're doing it, I have to say it's entertaining and just really, really intriguing to watch.
And so what do you think is next for her? Like, she's probably not going to be a Molly Mae. Is she like the creative director of Pretty Little Thing or whatever Molly Mae's ludicrous title is?
I hope not.
Do you think she's going to be more on TV?
I would imagine so. I mean, she's an actress. That's her background. She was on soaps in Turkey. And she has kind of, loads of things have popped up in recent weeks of like little other things that she's tried to do to kind of get her face on TV. So I'd imagine that's where she wants to go. She's very different to other Islanders in that she's so built for television that I really hope she doesn't limit herself by just like going on Dancing on Ice at the end of the year. Like,
yeah.
I really hope that, and that was the thing about Molly Mae. And I presume you've seen that video she's done with her manager where they discuss like the plan to get her where she was after she left Love Island. And they spoke about, you know, trying to limit her conversation time around Love Island and kind of give her that second to breathe after the show to like build up this appetite for her content. And I really hope Ekansu follows that part of the format, that she doesn't rush to grab the first deal.
Yeah.
She obviously has offers, that she really thinks through her
strategy
here.
Yeah, is important.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. So staying with reality television, Big Brother is coming back.
So I didn't have the channel for Big Brother for much of its existence.
Oh, Orla, you poor thing. Those early days were magic.
So like I've seen the legendary clips on YouTube and stuff, right? So I kind of have the characters in my mind, but I'm going to go back and watch a series. Which, should I start with the first one?
No. The first one was good because it was brand new. So as a concept, it was just wild, but it wasn't that exciting. I mean, it had its moments because it had Nasty Nick and stuff, but I actually think you should watch the series with Makozy.
And I think the jacuzzi. Yeah, I've heard about.
And Michelle, and what was Michelle's boyfriend's name? Stewie. Yeah, no, I think that's a really good one. Or the Nikki Graham one. Like, the Nikki Graham one is spectacular. Either of those will give you a good flavor of it. But we don't really. Go on.
No. I just remember just seeing them on magazines and stuff and being like, oh, I really wish I could watch the show. And then I watched it in more recent years when it was like more readily available to me. And it just didn't have, it lost its spark by then. It was just a different show. And I worry about the excitement about it returning, given two things, given it's over 20 years since it started and the landscape is hugely different. And also that it's moving to ITV2, which is obviously the home of Love Island. And Love Island has had to adapt so much with this duty of care element, which is obviously needed. needed, but it's definitely sanitized some parts of the series as well.
Yeah.
So I just, when I see like super fans being like, I cannot wait, I'm just like, I really don't think it's going to be the series that we left a couple of years ago.
Yeah,
so
I think you're right, because we are so much more kind of, you know, well-read and knowledgeable about mental health and exploitation now. Like, I think that will definitely have an impact on the way the series goes, which of course is good, because, you know, we don't want people to be exploited or to be in, yeah, you know, a vulnerable position. But at the same time, it does definitely impact the kind of entertainment content. But of course, the other thing that's different now from the first however many series of Big Brother is social media. Like, you know, you just didn't, yeah, come out. You might have come out to a crowd booing you, and there might have been headlines in a paper, but that kind of would have been it. You wouldn't have been bombarded with negative messages every day. So, you know, it is a different landscape. Anyway, we'll watch with interest. Sorry, dropped my microphone. Another story that came out this week was some sealed documents from the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case were unsealed, which is kind of interesting that that's even a possibility.
Yeah, so this was done by lawyer Andrea Burkhart, and she seemed to like crowdsource the money to unseal these documents, which she did, and then she shared them and published them online. There's more than 6,000 pages of these documents that both legal teams didn't want to be included into evidence during the trial, which ended 2 months ago. Can you believe that it was 2 months ago?
Yeah, it's
that
wild.
Finished up.
Yeah,
it feels so much more recent. But there's some like huge stuff in there, like some really, really shocking details. Some of the stuff that Depp's attorneys didn't want submitted were nude pictures of Amber Heard, footage of her sister when she appeared on a reality TV series, her history of past romantic relationships, her past working as an exotic dancer. And Heard's team claimed this was going to imply that Heard had some previous life as an escort. On her side, their team wanted to introduce texts between Johnny Depp and his friend Marilyn Manson, where Heard's name was discussed, claims that Depp suffered from erectile dysfunction, which they said, quote, absolutely is relevant to the sexual violence, including Mr. Depp's anger and use of a bottle to rape Amber Heard, which was obviously Heard during the trial. Yeah. Like some really shocking things that came out in these documents. And while it was obviously seen that these weren't relevant to the case, this will surely impact public opinion, which has played a huge part in the online discussion about it.
I don't know if it will, though. I mean, this is the thing for me, is that like there's so much evidence that was allowed, that was part of the trial, which I would think would be an indictment of someone's character, that people seem quick to forgive. Like this lawyer who crowdsourced the money to unseal these documents has a YouTube channel and is a Johnny Depp defender. And I just don't know. Like, I mean, for me, so I got a lot of grief about this when I spoke about this on the podcast when the trial ended. A lot of people didn't agree with me about my position on this case, and that's fine. We don't have to agree. Like, sure, did Amber Heard do things that are not great, that I'm sure she regrets, that, you know, are not an appropriate way to speak to or treat someone or touch someone or whatever? Yes, I think that that's true. But when you look at the text messages, and, you know, things like the incident with the bottle, you know, there is no question in my mind that Johnny Depp is a misogynist and that he is, you know, just a bad guy. Like, let's just be real. Like, if you're sending those kind of messages about a woman who you ostensibly love, and you're treating her in that way, that's not good. And yet there are still these people out there defending him. So I don't know if this evidence actually will make a difference.
Yeah. Do you know what I think is really important? And it's this idea of innocence and not guilty.
Yeah.
Right. So like neither party here is innocent, right? But this idea that she has been found liable of defaming, people are translating that in their mind into she is guilty and he is innocent.
Yes.
And that's not really, that's not
what it is. Yeah.
Here. And I think like you need to acknowledge that while the top line case, they might not have been able to prove that that was what they believe it was, there's all this other stuff that did happen.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, she can be guilty of defaming him and this stuff can still be true.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people are like, they want to make it very black and white.
Yeah.
And it's very grey.
It's not. Exactly. Exactly. Let's move on to Beyonce, who has had a mixed week. Her new album came out, which is amazing. I personally love it. But she got some grief over some lyrics.
Yeah, so there was a couple of bumps in the road to this release. Obviously, it leaked early and there was all that stuff, and then it released, and very quickly there was or criticisms for a lyric in her song Heated, which was said to be offensive and an ableist slur. And she has since removed that lyric, but it comes only weeks after Lizzo used the same word in one of her new songs. And it's caused this conversation online of, like, you know, some people are saying, oh, well, it doesn't mean the same thing in the US as people in the UK are taking it, because apparently all of the criticisms were coming from the UK. I don't know. And all this thing of, oh, we don't use it like that. And it's starting this greater conversation of, but it is a slur for people who have, you know, spastic cerebral palsy, and you're using it in this way, and you're being told by this community they find it offensive. You can't hide behind, well, I personally don't use it in an offensive way.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's not the argument.
Well, what's so wild, as you said, she's taking the word out, but what's wild to me is this literally just happened with Lizzo weeks ago.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? Like, I was giving this a lot of thought over the week because I am a Beyonce stan. And I was like, is it possible that, like, they just didn't see that happening? Like, that they, you know, her and the other creatives that she works with are so kind of secluded and in their own world that they genuinely weren't aware of the controversy over Lizzo? Or, like, that's one possibility. And the other possibility is that they saw it and they were just like, it'll be grand. And if it's the latter, that's poor.
Yeah. I mean, I think the song has like 12 songwriters listed on it. Like, it's got a team of people. It's obviously not just the songwriters as well that are going to be listening to this and proving it. Like, the song didn't kind of get written on a Monday and released on a Tuesday.
No.
Like, this was a period of time where they could consider, before even any of the Lizzo stuff came out, where they could consider and look into these things. And obviously the landscape is very different now to 10 years ago or whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
But like this, I just don't believe this story wasn't spotted, that this story of Lizzo having to come out and make a statement, which was a really good statement to be like, fully accept that I was in the wrong here. We're changing it immediately and I'm really sorry for the hurt caused.
Yeah.
I think she really acknowledged it and was like, absolutely take that on the chin. That was fully our bad. We should have known better. I just don't believe that in those circles, especially right now as well with album releases. You're definitely, all that stuff is planned out.
Yeah.
Like, everyone knows, okay, Lizzo's is dropping then, so we'll do it the next week, so they have room, that they're not competing with each other. Like, that stuff would be watched. I don't buy that they just missed the conversation.
No, I know. It's hard as a Beyonce stan, but I think she was wrong in this regard. Well, she was wrong anyway, but I think it was doubly wrong that she didn't just remove it before it was even released. And then, of course, she received criticism from Khalees as well this week.
Yeah, so Khalees found out that her song Milkshake was sampled on the song Energy on the new album.
Well, I think it's important to distinguish, because I've learned a lot this week from my reading about this album, that it is interpolated rather than sampled, which means it wasn't like they used a recording or a piece of Khalees' song. They used, I think, like a lyric or something, in the same way that in, like, you know, Hold Up, the Beyonce song, they use a Soulja Boy. She sings a Soulja Boy lyric, or a version of a Soulja Boy lyric, rather than hearing actual Khalees singing the song or whatever. And I think that's an important distinction in terms of the legality of this.
Yeah. So I was listening to a clip on YouTube where they use the same, like, drum beat from Milkshake that everyone will be able to hum in their heads.
Yeah.
And they use the la 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 la, that bit. And but it's very blurred in the background. Like, it's very like a wash of it. Like, it's very, if you didn't have someone going, this is it, pointing to a TikTok like caption, then I wouldn't have spotted it.
Yeah, because I didn't hear it when I listened to the album.
No, it definitely doesn't jump out at you as like, oh my God, that's Milkshake. Like, absolutely, you cannot hear it unless you're really looking for it.
Mm.
It's worth noting that Milkshake was written by Pharrell Williams and Chad Hugo, and they also wrote on this song. Now, Khalees initially came out and was very much, she's posted a number of videos on Instagram, very upset and very frustrated that this had been done and she had not been informed, speaking directly to Beyonce, but then later kind of confirmed that her anger was actually really with Pharrell and Chad Hugo, because she said that they signed a deal with her years earlier that she didn't read properly, or that basically cut her out of any kind of royalties for her first album and for Milkshake, which is obviously one of the biggest hits. But she just felt like it was, while she mightn't have legally been entitled to be informed about the interpolation, whatever it's called, she felt like it was just the right thing to do as a woman in music, to bring her, like, this is what we're doing. So I think what she initially came out with, she kind of backtracked a little bit and clarified her statements a little bit later. But it's just a rough couple of days for Beyonce with the new album between you know, all of these things coming out. And then you've Monica Lewinsky also jumping into the conversation about removing the lyric from Partition and all this stuff. And it's like, it's probably not been the smoothest release ever.
No, but look, I mean, we live in highly critical times. That's just absolutely the truth. And before I let you go, just a bit of news on the Irish Oscar front, because an Irish language film that actually I've mentioned on the show before has been selected for Oscar submission.
Yes, it has. So the IFTAs have submitted on Colleen Kuhn for the Irish entry for Best International Feature for next year's Oscars. It received really good reviews and really highly rated. And it's an Irish language film, which is obviously really excited to see that nominated. Mm. And it's said by experts, who I am not, because I'm not always watching the Best International Film category. It might surprise you to know. But it says it's got a really good chance of making it forward to the long list. Now, the long list is 15 films long, so they won't be the final list that we see on the night where they kind of quickly run through. Because this category usually doesn't get televised. But very exciting, and it's a continuation of Irish participation in the Oscars. We seem to have had a really good run of it in the last couple of years, where there's always some Irish contender in there, which is just a really good sign for the Irish film industry.
Yeah, it's great, and great to see, as you say, an Irish language film do so well. It's been really successful, and I have a vested interest because I used to work with Cleona Ní Chruaillí, who is the producer of the film, and and she is just absolutely sound. I haven't seen her in years. Cleona, if you're listening, I'd love to meet up. Her husband is the, I think, like, writer and director of the film. It's his project anyway. So you know, these are real nice Irish people who might, you know, get a chance at the Oscars, and that's thrilling.
Isn't that cool that it's just like their everyday job, and now they're like, we could get the Oscars next year. That's just really exciting, especially for creatives in this country. It's kind of, you know, an underappreciated industry here so often. So it's so good to see it on a world stage like that, especially, like you said, an Irish language film. It's just, I mean, I've lost all Irish, which I feel such shame about. So
I never learned it in the first place. I've got to get on it. It's on my to-do list for life. I kind of want to try and learn with Sam, my five-year-old, but he's already way ahead of me. So I don't know. I have to go back to the drawing board on that one.
Come on.
Honest to God. Well, look, Orla, if people want to listen back to my pod on paper, it is available on all the usual podcast platforms. I know you did what I heard was a spectacular finale two-hour episode. So people might want to go and get a go of that. I gather you guys had a few refreshments.
No, it was just me. I need to defend the girls, right? They were totally sober. I was after 41 episodes. I was absolutely after a few glasses of Prosecco. I was like, we're drinking tonight, girlies, right? Okay. I'm hoping I don't see anything inflammatory myself. But yeah, 2 hours for anyone that likes to listen to their podcasts on a walk. If you're getting a step target, that'll be a great one to hit the step target with. 2 hours.
Fab.
Stupid.
Where else can people find you, Orla?
You can find me on social media at Orla Condon, and a new podcast is in the works. That'll be coming in the next kind of month or so. So keep an eye out for that.
Oh, that's very exciting. We'll have to chat about that again. Okay, Orla, thank you so much. Well, we are just about at the end of this week's episode, but of course I have got some recommendations for you, and I just realized they're all pretty gay and pretty queer recommendations I have for you this week. But hey, look, you know, that's what I devoured. And they're all TV. The first one is one I've been meaning to get around to for ages, so you might have watched it already. It is the Channel 4 program Big Boys. I am devouring it. I think I'm 5 episodes in, and I'm already devastated about the fact that it's going to be over. It stars, you know, the English boy from Derry Girls. Obviously, he has a name. But, like, we all know him as the English boy from Derry Girls, right? Isn't that? That's how we know him. It is a series by Jack Rook, who is a comedian who does a lot of comedy around grief and, I suppose, life in general. It, as I said, stars Dylan Llewellyn, and the co-star is John Poynting, who I hadn't heard of before, but who is brilliant in it. Basically, Dylan Llewellyn plays Jack at university. His dad has recently died, and he is gay, and he's kind of dealing with, you know, his sexuality and also being at university and having to be a little bit more outgoing than he previously has in the aftermath of his dad's death. But it is so funny. So funny and so heartwarming. Every episode's a half an hour long, so it's not a huge undertaking, and it's just delightful. John Poynting, plays his housemate, Danny, who is a bit of a Jack the Lad. He's going to college as a mature student at 25, and he has his own kind of, you know, baggage that he's coming with. I can't recommend it enough. It's so good. It's called Big Boys. It's on Channel 4, so it's on all four if you want to stream it. Then Queer as Folk, you probably are familiar with Queer as Folk. It was originally made I think it was back in the 90s, was it? It started off as an American series and, or sorry, it started out as an English series. Yeah, 1999 was the first time Queer as Folk aired. It was basically chronicling the lives of gay men in Manchester. Then there was a remake of it in the US some years later, and now there is another remake of it. And this time it's very different because it's a lot more diverse and it's a lot more inclusive. So you've got non-binary people, you've got trans people, you've got you know, people who fall on all different places on the spectrum of sexuality. And it's really good. It starts off in the aftermath of basically a shooting in a gay nightclub or a queer nightclub in New Orleans. And it's kind of about the fallout for the people who were there that night and the people who were affected by it. And it's really good. It's on Stars Play, STARZPLAY, Stars Play, which is like an add-on to your Amazon Prime subscription. So it's an extra $4.99 a month. You may or may not want to pay that. I do not have Stars Play and I manage to watch it, if you get my drift. Also on Stars Play is P-Valley. P-Valley is a series that's set in Mississippi in a strip club, and it is really good fun. It's a bit kind of, sometimes it lays it on a little bit thick, but some of the characters are brilliant and it's really kind of fascinating to be in the environment of a strip club. You're talking about, you know, working class people who are facing challenges, and there are people, mostly people of color, who, you know, you just don't see on your TV really. And, you know, I think they have really interesting relationships. And again, there's a spectrum of sexuality, a spectrum of gender identity. And, you know, we don't often get to see queer people from lots of different types of backgrounds in lots of different types of environments. And I really, really enjoyed P-Valley. Season 2 is still airing, I think, in the US. Season 1 is obviously all available. So there you go. Big Boys, Queer as Folk, P-Valley. That's it from me. All I did really, I suppose, was watch TV. I didn't consume any other kind of media really this week. I hope you have a really lovely one. And if you're feeling miserable, I was there last week and I'm back in the game this week. So hopefully things will improve for you over the next number of days. They can't all be good, unfortunately, in this life. Sending you lots of love and I will talk to you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.